Tonight's final bout is for the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship, scheduled for one fall or to curfew.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
The last of the Titans.
In the passion and death of their struggle, the very art that had raised them to such Olympian heights was lost. Their techniques vanished.
Referee giving instructions here to both principals, and this should be one whale of a match to wind up things here in Madison Square Garden.
All right, fans of the Titans of Wrestling, if you're digging this show, you got to know that we've been doing them for a while. We've got an archive of shows that you're going to blow your mind. Just head on over to the Place to Be Nation to check them out. Titans of Wrestling Archives, you know you want to hear it.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Titans of Wrestling. And we've been through a lot of stuff together, us guys, and every once in a while we lose somebody in the line of duty, don't we? Because late 1982 has gotten so bad that we're a man down today. Yes. Johnny, do you want to explain what's happened?
I have a written statement here from our very beloved Pete, and he said, let me get this. My dear fellow Titans, you know I love you. You know I have stuck through many bad shows, but after watching this footage, I cannot and I will not comment on just how shitty this wrestling is. It is beneath me, and I feel that I will add nothing to this except vile and venom, which it deserves. Yours truly, Pete Schermacher.
So it's just the three of us today. Caddy, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I mean, you know, give me all the shitty footage in the world, baby, I'll watch it all, and I'll come back and talk about it any day.
Oh, he's calling him out.
I'm calling Johnny, you out, Pete.
Johnny, how are you doing?
I am doing quite well, and yes, this is shitty, but there is so much around it that's very interesting that I think we're going to have to talk about, because the wrestling itself, there's nothing to talk about.
Why, my buddy Chad made a tweet at Pete that made me laugh earlier. He called him the Sal Palomo of the pro wrestling only feed. All heart, which I thought was quite interesting. Just
insult him on so many levels.
That's what he's doing right now. He's making tiny ships in bottles. And can't be bothered to show up for a show.
No, I'm going to speak for him. He's going to turn around and go, that's right, because I'm a wild man.
I just know that Pete would have turned him inside. Yeah, this is what the tweet says. Pete is the Sal Palomo of PWO. A lot of heart in the kid. So there we go.
Because it's a jobber, and it's a WWE jobber, and he's an NWA Houston guy. So that's just a double shot insult.
Yeah. So anyway, that's pleased. So there you go, Pete. Now, getting into, so we're finishing up on 1982. Basically, it's December, mm-hmm. right, Kelly? On this footage that we're going to watch.
Yep, it's all December.
And
there's no better month for this to be is when everything is cold and dead.
Exactly.
And yeah, winter does seem to be coming in the Vince Senior era. We'll just put it that way. And this is something that we kind of talked before we started recording today. Like, I've heard on the grapevine, I read around that Vince Sr., I mean, yes, we know that he gets sick and he dies, like a year after this? It's basically 1984 that he finally passes, right?
Yes.
But I've read that he, like, aside from that, he was done. He felt like he didn't want to continue. Mm-hmm. This is one of the reasons that he sold the company to Vinnie Jr., as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how much, Senior not caring anymore or feeling like he was done plays into just how putrid some of this stuff has been that we've been watching. Any thoughts?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it probably plays a part in the general feeling. Like, it seems that there is, just a lack of inspiration as far as the challengers for Backlund, for example. And it gets worse in 83. Then you get a lot of repeats like Ivan Koloff back, Sergeant Slaughter back, George Steele back, Don Morocco's back. So, there's just a lack of freshness in the world title scene. And then you have a lot of guys who have been around forever and ever still in significant spots like the Strongbows and others. So, it's got that feeling of, he's not really too excited about promoting wrestling anymore.
So, I mean, do you think you just put things in a holding pattern until Vince Jr. could kind of take over and stamp his creative vision on the product? Because technically Vince is in control by this point even. But it seems like Senior's still booking in some way?
I don't really spot
any Vince Jr. hallmarks in any of this stuff, do you?
Yeah, I think Vince Sr. is still calling the shots, booking-wise.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Does Backlund talk about this in his book, Johnny?
He actually does. Well, not so much the booking and Vince Sr., but to that point, Vince Sr. is the one who went up to him and said, you're going to be dropping the title to the Iron Sheik tonight. So whether or not that was, he knew should be the guy who delivered that message, because Vince Jr. was definitely in charge then. But he still had that influence. Bob does talk about how he was running out of challengers and they had to do repeats. That's definitely in the book. He mentions that prominently.
Mm-hmm. When I look back on the stuff that we've watched, I'm kind of looking back on 79 and 80 with a sense of fondness now.
Yeah.
Because, when was the last... I mean, Bruno and Larry, we've talked that up. 81 was good.
I was going to say, I think 81 was really strong with Slaughter and Patterson, and also Bob had a lot of really good to great matches throughout the year.
And even the early part of 82 hasn't been like awful with, I remember Adonis came through, didn't he?
Yeah.
We've had a bit of Buddy Rose. That hasn't been bad.
No.
Snuka
was a hot challenger when he was a heel.
Mm.
At MSG, yeah. Right? And then the big cage match in the summer.
But seemingly since then, things have really fallen off a cliff.
Well, what I think possibly is with their system of working guys through and then out as the challengers to both the world and then the Intercontinental titles and the tags as well, they just hit this point now where everyone's somewhere else, we need to bring some people back, and here's who we have. And what we're really looking at is the transitory period between everything else we've been watching and the end of the road here, the Vince Jr. years, and what's going to happen. Because even within a year, shit starts snapping in a few ways. The Snuka Morocco feud, some various other guys, some of the guys returning in better roles, and the beginning of there's an energy there. This is the pits, and to know where it's going based on what we've seen. That's exactly my point. But how great was that 80 and 81 stuff? And we really were digging that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this is the Nader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And boom. And you, in a neat way, in a year in Crockett, you get the same thing. Because 83, you know, really hot. You know, things have been up and down, but hot. Then 84, they call it that whole thing on YouTube, the year of transition. And there might have been some good shit in there, but yeah, it wasn't that hot. There was some, you know, and then Dusty comes in and boom, they take off. So it's within 2 years, both Crockett and WWF have their Naders, but Vince's, of course, you know, is what it is. But this is, you know, oof.
So let's get on to some of the footage then. It's Big John Studd. He's in Roger's corner with Blassie.
First, we have Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk to this? On my footage, it was just Big John Studd in the Roger's corner.
Oh, really?
They all blend together. It's okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe my DVDs. I did think my DVD was short, but mine started with Studd in Roger's corner.
No, huh. It's three Rogers corners in a row, and the first one's with Jimmy Snuka.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, why don't you talk us through the Rogers corner stuff, Johnny?
Okay. It'll be quick. Number one, we talked about Buddy Rogers the last show and how impressed we were and how awesome, and that we now totally love Buddy Rogers. This was a failed experiment, and we see it here. And they wanted to go with it, of course. You know, Piper's Pit comes in, it becomes a huge thing. This was not working, and he's slurring and shaking, and then Snuka comes in, and he doesn't make any fucking sense. And it's not good. As awesome as we saw them in that match, as awesome as we'll see him in the ring on this footage, he seems like an old shaky man, and you don't want to see that. The next one's with Morocco, and it starts off the same way, and like Don Morocco just decides, no, we need to turn this up, and it just snaps. Yeah, he's like, just asking him the question. He's like, and how dare you? Ah, I'm Don Morocco. It's now Morocco's corner. Now your Buddy Rogers just took over the mic and was like, I got to save this.
Oh, yeah, he was struggling. He was going through, the bullet points or whatever that he was told beforehand, and then was just like, fuck this, I'm just going to cut a Don Morocco promo.
Yeah.
Because it was sinking like a stone, that segment.
Yeah. Oh, and Morocco, whatever you might say about his in-ring work, great promo always, was okay. Then we get Roger's Corner. Well, the Big John Studd one comes up a little bit later.
Yeah.
The next Rogers Corner is the creepiest thing ever, Parvin. I wish you'd seen this. It's Eddie Gilbert with Bob Backlund and Arnold Skoland. And Eddie Gilbert's on one side of the Nature Boy, and the other two are together staring at him. And Eddie looks like a goober. And it's all about how they've decided to take him under their wing. You know, and he's like, I'd like to thank Mr. Backlund. But the fact that it's the two of them just leering and looking the way they look, just this is how they recruit altar boys and the things that end up in the movie Spotlight. The creepiest shit you've ever seen, brother.
And Bob's still got his wide-collared 70s shirt going.
And it's not good.
No, and Bob is... We can see this now that he's getting really stale and just feels less and less, modern or whatever. He's just not in touch with what was cool in wrestling anymore.
It might have worked without Arnold Skoland leering, you know, as this old fat man with his dumb big boy hair slicked back with the bad dye in it and just
This was a shoot too, because in real life Backlund was asked to take care of Eddie on the road, right? Because Eddie was already in trouble with drugs and drinking too much and partying and all that. And so it's true. Like they turned it into a wrestling storyline as well,
which is even creepier when you look at it.
So Eddie Gilbert at this point in his career was not a good talker, and I take it. Did he get to speak?
A little bit.
Yeah, just a little.
You could sense, I don't know if you could sense that he'd be good someday, or the fact that we know how awesome he was that you project that on there, but you know, there was a spark of, I don't know, he's not awful.
He didn't try to ape Backlund's odd way of talking.
He's like, I respect you so much, Mr. Backlund, that I'm gonna talk just like you from now on, but with a southern accent, so it's gonna sound really much like, you know, like Sling Blade and and fried potatoes. I love them. But he did decide to start walking around with his ass sticking out, like his mentor.
So where does the footage go now? Because I'm worried as to because I thought, God, that didn't seem very long when I was watching this stuff.
Right.
How much other stuff did I miss?
So you missed the tag match with Backlund and Gilbert on TV against the two job guys? You didn't see that either?
Yep. The first thing I've got is the Big John Studd challenge.
Okay. Well, I'll
believe you. I think you fast forward to all this shit.
Honestly, I didn't. I just pressed play and
I tell you, Kelly. Between him and Pete, I don't know.
I know, they're skipping a lot of stuff now.
Uh-huh, okay.
Not orthodox Titans anymore.
Tell us about this tag match then.
Yeah, I'll walk you through the tag match. So it basically, on the Rogers Corner segment that we just talked about, it was mentioned that they're going to have a tag match the next week. So here's that match the next week. It's Backlund and Gilbert against Tito Senza and Joe Martin. And as I always do, I give the job guys their due with bios, because they're human beings too. They deserve bios just like all the other wrestlers, except for Pedro Morales. So Tito Senza, not much here. He worked in Montreal. He was introduced as being from Montreal. And he wrestled there in the 70s. Looks like he was like a lower mid-card guy in Montreal, not a total jobber. Because he's teaming with some guys in Montreal. And he worked there in the early 80s, also in Toronto. And then he was basically a jobber in the WWF for a few years, 82 and 85. That's about all. He had a not bad look. Like, he didn't look like a total bottom of the rung job guy. He looked like somebody that could have been a mid-card guy in the right territory. And Joe Martin, well, this is one of the few I've failed to turn up a single thing on. I typed his name into the search engine on Wrestling Data and got nothing. So he's, I guess, a pure jobber. There's nothing on Joe Martin.
Did you try Jack?
I mean, that's very possible that it's like a slight difference in the name and that's all it is, but oh well. Joe Martin, you're immortalized on Titans of Wrestling if nothing else. And so this match is, you know, it was a not bad little squash match, I thought. Backlund still doesn't have a belt. From, you know, how many months now has it been since Superstar destroyed it? They're taking their sweet time getting a new belt. This also speaks, I think, to Vince Sr.'s lack of interest at this time. He couldn't be bothered to get a new belt for his champion.
Do you know how long it takes to get a belt that big? It's not...
Yeah. It's being worked on in Manhattan somewhere at the
moment. I want it big and I want it green.
Yes, because the next belt they have is a very interesting design, that's for sure. There was a lot of quick tags in this match, working over the arm of Martin. I want to note here, or I did note here, that, and we're talking about the changes in the presentation and changes from Vince Sr. to Vince Jr., Allentown looks different now. It's brighter. It's lit a lot brighter. It's not the smoky old hall that we fell in love with at first, you know, in the 70s and early 80s. It's looking more like what the presentation will look going forward, of course. So I think this is a Vince Jr. influence. And another thing after the match, and of course, you know, it ends with actually, it's Bob giving an atomic drop, and then he hesitates. He thinks about going for the cover, but because he's such a great guy, he tags the young up-and-coming Eddie Gilbert in, and Eddie does a sunset flip off the top rope for the pin. And then after the match is over, as it's fading away, you can hear Cars by Gary Numan playing in the background, there's another sign that the times are a-changing. And that Vince Jr. has more influence, because now you're getting the pop music.
Make sure Vince Sr. is still alive. He's like, what's this goddamn hippie fucking music on my show, Vinny?
Think of the gap between Gary Numan in 1982 and like Buddy Rogers and Arnold Scarlett and that scene that you were just describing. Bob.
Yeah, I know, it didn't match at all. It was a total harbinger for the future. It was like, well, this is coming. You know, it's still going to be another year plus, and then you'll have the rock and wrestling connection and all that stuff. But
right, and this was New York City. You know, exactly to your point. You're like, okay, it's Arnold Scarlett and Bob Backlund are the best representatives of New York City in the 80s.
I should mention that this tag match you're talking about is actually Bob's second only appearance on TV in 1982. Is that interesting?
Yeah. Well, that was about that was about right. Every year he would appear a couple times, probably.
And it was an All Star, not Championship Wrestling, which is also interesting to think about. So, carry on, Johnny.
I'm saying you had Arnie with his stupid dyed hair on the side, and just. Again, the announcers filleting him is just the funniest thing. The most wonderful, best manager, beloved by all, Arnold Scarlett. I don't think anyone ever felt that way.
All around great guy. That's a famous.
He's an all around great guy. And I don't remember anyone going, you know who was great? That Arnold Scarlett.
He never really gets big pops or anything either, does he?
He used to. when there was still people who remembered him from watching him on 50s TV, right. Gorgeous George and shit in the audience. which is what we're going to see, and we're seeing that throughout this footage, is the decrease amongst people sitting at ringside in plaid sports coats to kids in t-shirts. We're going from bad plaid sports coats to t-shirts. It's another part of the whole transition that's happening here.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. What happens now then? So
now we have Rogers Corner with Fred Blassie and the world's greatest actor, Big Johnston.
So now I'm back on track with the footage. I've actually seen this stuff. So it's John Studd in Rogers' Corner. Blassie is holding a wad full of money, and he's fanning them out, a bit like Virgil would do later. What's the story here, Johnny?
Well, they're doing the if anyone can slam John Studd, they'll get $500. And first I'm like, well, money was tight. $500. I was expecting $5,000. But then they say, and each time someone can't do it, they'll add another $500.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm like, oh, okay. No, that okay. Then that's pretty awesome when you eventually get up to, I guess they eventually got up to 15,000 by WrestleMania 1. They just stopped talking about it. It was collecting wrestling interest.
Even this felt derivative and had been done a million times already. And like, do you know what I mean? It's like we've seen the Cobra Clutch Challenge. And
yeah, but if you love, if you're as big a fan of Southern Memphis type wrestling as I am, and this shit never gets old for me, but boy, Stud, you know, when he was delivering his lines and his eyes are darting just back and forth, you know.
So nervous.
It's like it's like he was reading a ransom note.
That was so funny. The eyes. Oh my god.
Oh my goodness.
But this is it. This is the beginning of the body slam challenge. That would be a gimmick for Stud for years going forward.
Well, so
Stud just something. It went from 500 to 15,000.
Yeah.
Are you saying the Stud just stays the whole time now, all the way until WrestleMania 1?
Yeah. Yeah, he does. I believe so.
Okay.
Maybe a brief period, but no, he's there in 84, all of 84, isn't he?
I'm really looking forward to 1983, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
I always liked Big John Studd in the ring. I just was always, when I was a kid, and I liked Big John Studd, but boy, he was the worst promo.
Well, we go on now to, so basically there's a jobber. Did you clock this jobber's name, who comes out before this Stud versus Gilbert match?
It's not even a jobber, sir. Yeah, it's a fan from the crowd.
Fan.
Oh, it was a fan. Oh, Christ.
Well, yeah.
Shows how much I was paying attention. I mean, okay. So
he was the worst. His name, by the way, because you know I wrote this down. Joe Puglisi.
Yeah.
And Joe Puglisi is wearing really high jeans with his t-shirt tucked in, and he's going to do the challenge, and he stinks. And it's not just his quote-unquote attempt where he goes down, puts his hands just near him a little, Stud pushes him, and he's like, oh, man, I'm out of here. And I'm like, ugh, I hate this guy. He's the worst. Although you know it's like, okay, we're gonna do this. Big John Studd's like, no, you are not touching my balls. I'll kill you. Okay, I'm out. Oh, I'm out.
You know, I must have heard the name Joe Puglisi and thought, yeah, he's got to be a jobber with a name like that in this territory.
You would think.
It just sounds like
that was it. So you want to be a wrestler, kid? No.
Well, I love anyway. How they started this challenge with like fans. So that's like the absolute bottom, even below jobbers. Because I'm assuming next they'll have like the job guys try and slam Stud.
Well, I mean, this goes right back to the Carney days, isn't it?
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. But I love how they have like this escalating. You know, where you start with like fans as the very bottom, then you're gonna have jobbers, then you'll have, you know, lower mid card guys, and it'll just keep going bigger and bigger until you get to the top. Hilarious.
Many layers of jobbers, of course. Many layers of the hierarchy between the
It's the ultimate the hierarchy of wrestling.
Eventually they'll forget about it. He'll have a feud with Hulk Hogan. You know, then somehow they'll transfer that account to Bobby Heenan, who will then have the accumulated money, $500 at a time.
So Stud actually has a match now, directly after this, Eddie Gilbert, which immediately made me think, well, why isn't Gilbert taking the challenge? Did that not occur to you guys?
Like, yeah, it did seem kind of weird.
It seems strange.
Well, you're the one with the money. You're the one that controls the challenge. You know.
And, well, what did you make of this? So we don't have our lead analyst here. I guess this goes to... Do we go to Johnny first? What did you make of this match?
The best is occasionally they cut to apparently Bob Backlund and Arnold Skulland watching the match.
Right.
Yes.
From the set of Rogers Corner, and Bob's reactions, his facial reactions, are fucking over the top and hilarious. Oh, while Arnie's just staring, drunk as fuck, not giving a shit, no shits given by Arnold Skulland for what's going on. Because Bob reacted like, oh my God, Eddie's being murdered. And Skull's just like, fuck him. It's the worst.
Yeah. The punk kid can't handle the liquor. I don't have any time for him.
But he's, then we have a...
He's had that like 2,000 yards stare for a long time now, Arnold Skulland. He just... I mean, in all the footage we've watched, has he ever done anything? Nothing. Well,
he hit someone with a chair once. I remember that.
With water years ago.
Anyway,
Then we have, hold on real quick. Vince does call out Dick Worley, which is great. And Big John Studd does knock Dick Worley to the fucking ground. So I am not ridiculous in my love for Big John Studd, and that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, he did. He dealt with the ref, so that was... something.
And Worley, and I guess he really, it was stiff because Worley sold it.
What did you make of the match, Kenny?
I mean, it's just an angle because it sets up, what happens is Stud gets Gilbert into the Tree of Woe and just starts beating the shit out of him until Worley steps in and Worley gets thrown to the ground. So Stud gets DQ'd. Backlund comes in, of course, and it's just, here's the angle to set up a program with Stud and Backlund, which would be coming up in early 1983. So, yeah, it was just a good, simple angle. I liked it.
In a very awkward attack by Stud on Backlund in the corner.
With Backlund,
he comes in to protect Eddie. Stud Pearl Harbors him. And then it just like gets real awkward. He leaves, and I realized it. Bob's wearing his only suit. And he told Stud real quick, I will stretch you if you fucking ruin this suit. I'm gone.
He looked giant in that suit, I thought. I thought Backlund looked really big here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's bulked up a little bit?
No, I think he's actually getting smaller or losing size.
Well, no, because that's what we're about to see.
Yeah.
Is coming up to 83, he takes on a different type of training regimen well. And it's all about being really lean and muscular.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess I missed a bit of the setup to this with Gilbert in Rogers' Corner. But I find it very difficult to care about this angle at all. I mean, this is meant to be the hook to come to MSG. It's like, okay.
This is Backlund, a different time, man.
Checking on Gilbert. I don't know. Just, as far as hot angles go, it didn't seem very hot.
No, I'm not saying it was a hot angle. I'm just saying it was a.
Well, you know what it was? It was it was a test angle because it didn't work out with Stud, but we're going to see who it does work out with because it happens again with more dire circumstances young Eddie Gilbert.
Yeah.
And so now a little piece of my heart died because after that match, which I don't know if I'm going to be giving without Pete here, I don't know if I can be giving my star ratings, one star, whatever. One star. we now go to Don Morocco taking on Pedro Morales.
Oh, I thought you were prematurely giving this match one star.
No. I'm talking about. And when I saw, I was like, no, don't be Pedro, don't be. And it was like, oh, fuck, again. Don Morocco versus Pedro Morales. And it's like, when that is your starting point, you've got a long, long way to go. And I noted near the start of this match, Gorilla Monsoon was on commentary. We've got Gorilla and Vince again. And he just said, you won't see any wasted energy or wasted effort out of Morocco. I wrote that down and thought, astute point, Gorilla, because we don't see any wasted energy out of Morocco at all, do we? Or any energy, period. So what did you... I have basically hated this matchup to date. And Morocco had actually been away, hadn't he? Like,
yes.
Like, I know... Did we see him last time? Oh.
Maybe no.
So he's actually been away since 1981.
About a year. Yeah.
And so, I mean, this goes to tell you how much of a holding pattern 82 has been in, because I didn't really notice Morocco had been missing, or that now that he'd come back and his face, it just feels like more of the same, you know.
Right.
He's been gone, like, we haven't seen him for a couple of matches and now he's back.
He was surfing.
and I just had a message from Pete. He may be joining us, so maybe he might come in. But why don't you tell us, Johnny, what you made of the Morocco Morales matchup here?
Okay, first of all, I'm going to congratulate myself, because I saw at ringside an older Polynesian woman, and I said to myself, I think that's Mrs. Maivia.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little later, they mention that she's there at ringside, and they mention that, you know, Peter had just passed away. But good eye on me. The match sucked, but I thought once it turned into the brawl on the outside, that then the crowd, because you mentioned, Barb, the crowd seemed hot. They weren't hot, really, unless Pedro was making a comeback, or until it became basically ECW. And that portion of it, I actually thought was entertaining. I thought they were bringing the hate and the heat there. But the leading up to that, it was just like, boring as fuck until, like, oh, now they're slamming each other on the metal rails. Okay.
Well. Look what the cat brought in here.
Yeah, I know, man. Jesus, I just woke up, man. Long day at work. Oh, God. Sorry, fellas.
Yeah. By the way, the name of the bar...
Johnny, describe it. It sounded like you were talking about the shitty Morocco, man.
Yeah, but by the way, the name of the bar he hangs out at is called The Work. So.
Jeez.
Well, I mean, we read out a statement from you saying that you were refusing to review this shitty wrestling, Pete, but you've decided to.
Change of heart at the last second. I knew you'd come around, Pete. I said that at the beginning. Yeah. That
you know, when I was reading the prepared statement you gave me earlier, refusing to talk about this shitty show, shitty disc of wrestling, I knew you'd change your mind and come back, my friend.
Well, look at him. He's turned up for the work rate match. Pedro, this is gone.
he woke up and he's tuned in. He goes, I'm not going to go to sleep before I talk about this Morales Morocco match, because it was a classic.
Terrible.
Well, Pete, given that you are our lead analyst, I don't want to put you on the spot, but what did you make of the latest Intercontinental title defense?
Oh, that thing was just terrible. I mean, it was dragged and dragged and dragged. Then it's like, okay, we're going to go home. So let's now turn it up and make the crowd hot. It's kind of, it was just bullshit. And but I did like Morocco's, like, teasing the post-match brawl. And then he's like, nah, and leaves. I like that psychology. But other than that, man, this thing was a dogger. Straight up dogger.
I did like Pedro actually biting his nose.
I enjoyed the trolling after the bell as well. I thought that was a lot of fun. And it's like, well, where's it? Like, it's like, as soon as the bell rings, Morocco just turns off. But as soon as, like, he's in an interview situation or post match, or like, he's great apart from in the match.
And I know you guys already covered it earlier. Like, he was incredible on Roger's corner, and it's like a dynamic performer. And then he comes out, and it's like, man, I gotta sweat. Fuck that. Chin lock, okay. Front face lock, okay. That's move two. Ooh, shit, I'm out of moves. And
okay. I'm gonna put this out there with this because I love Morocco, but I agree with all that. Look at the rest of this roster at that time, and if he's like, shit, if all I got to do is do my reactions and shit.
Okay. Johnny, if this is all, if Don did this, just in this little spot here.
Oh, no. I know he's got a history.
Morocco had a history of this guy who was supposed to have this incredible psychology. I see none of it.
Well, I think he's got great crowd psychology. I think that's what they mean by that. But okay. When he goes down to Georgia, you know, he knows, like, well, he knows when he's down south, he seems a little better because he has to work a little harder. Not here.
Not at all. Not here.
I've seen him in the 70s in Florida, and he's a hell of a lot of he works a lot harder when he's with Briscoe. So, I think he gets lazy.
The Georgia stuff I've seen, I'm like, you can sense he's working a little harder because he has to. He doesn't have to here.
Yeah, the standards are much different down there than in New York.
Now, Kelly, I know how much of a fan of the front face lock you are. How did you take this match?
Well, I mean, to be fair, when he put on the front face lock, I thought, oh no, not like I was having flashbacks to those horrible matches these two guys had in '81. But it didn't last that long, and I actually thought this was, you know, not too bad. It was heated, and there was, you know, a lot of brawling on the outside. You know, they had way worse matches in 1981 compared to this one. Not something I'm going to watch a million times or ever again, but I was expecting, you know, 10 minutes of them on the mat doing nothing, and really this was, you know, it made sense considering they had a feud in 1981 that they would go right back to the hate in this one and have the spots outside slamming him into the railing, and Pedro actually had a few good bumps to the outside. So yeah, this was one of Pedro's better matches in the last I can't remember the last time he had a decent outing. He's had some really pathetic performances. And yeah, I thought it was, and I liked the brawl at the end. You know, it kept going. The crowd was into it. This was a lot better than I thought it would be.
Seriously?
Yeah, I'm totally serious. Hey, I'm not watching the
brawling.
I gotta live in that world where Johnny and Kelly have those expectation levels.
No. I think we both just said the brawling parts were good.
So yeah, that was like 45 seconds tops.
Yeah, it's a couple minutes, but
I mean, I liked how you described it really in our chat. Half the first half sucked, but the second half.
That's what I said. Yeah.
Some rose-colored glasses, bub. I'm cranky. I just woke up.
Apparently.
How much more are these two have we got to come?
Oh, a whole lot.
All of 1983. No, just one more match. Next month.
But it's all over. I'm looking forward to watching the Snuka Morocco match because I really didn't ever watch that up close. So I'm really curious how that plays out promo wise. I mean, I know the matches are probably going to suck, but
promo wise, it's some of the best shit. Promo wise, it's some of the best shit ever.
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. So I gave it 2 stars, which I guess is an improvement over their 81 stuff.
I gave it a star and a quarter.
Yeah, well, there we go. It's in that ballpark. But I guess we're at the stage where that is better than expectations. So Gorilla has a real problem with the DQ here. It was a double DQ decision.
Yeah.
And
yes,
Gorilla really goes off on one. Did you have any notes on Gorilla here, Johnny?
No, he just correctly pointed out that, I'm sorry, Morocco kicked the ref.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the DQ happened.
But Pedro accidentally also
Yeah, because Pedro, and you've seen this finish actually before. I know I've seen it plenty of times back in the day, where one guy does something, but then when the other guy does it, then it's a double DQ. Pedro accidentally hit the ref. Morocco does it on purpose. Ref says it's double DQ. And Monsoon's like, I don't understand this whatsoever. He's clearly Pedro was an accident, and Morocco did it on purpose. I don't understand this double DQ at all.
Yeah. So, I mean,
really?
Gorilla, is still in this kind of slightly dickish mode, I guess.
Oh, slightly. We're about to see. Yeah. We're about to talk about Gorilla Monsoon being the biggest dick in the world, and it's glorious. It makes this shit match we're about to talk about amazing.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit clotheslines and headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Left Is from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
So we go from the greatness of Pedro Morales and Don Morocco to Bob Backlund now, taking on the legendary superstar Billy Graham in a lumberjack match. And I obviously like to have fun spotting all the lumberjacks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I do have a couple of little notes on this. Swede Hansen is the referee, looking absolutely massive. The lumberjacks here, I felt kind of highlighted something about the roster. The roster was looking pretty thin at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, Fuji and Sato are still around. Who else was there? Was Morocco? Buddy Rose was there. Mm-hmm. Gurria was there. Beyond those, the Strongbows was still hanging around.
Estrada.
Rocky Johnston, I saw. Yeah. SD Jones, I guess, is some name value. Yeah. Beyond that, it's all jobbers. like the all of the Lumberjacks beyond those guys are.
No, that was the Lumberjacks, them and Estrada. That was it.
And the demon. Don't forget the demon. And the demon.
I'm sorry. The demon was there hanging out.
Yeah. And is the demon the Baron?
The Baron played the demon, but there was a tag team. It was the Baron and Charlie Fulton as the demons. I don't think this was the Baron, though. I thought the body didn't look like the Baron's at all.
I wonder who that demon was then.
Well, it was probably Charlie Fulton then.
Well, because this demon was refusing to do any work whatsoever, so it might have been...
Right. Yes, that sounds like Cicluna, for sure. I thought the body seemed too youthful.
Hey, Baron, we need you to put on this demon mask and go out and do a lumberjack match. Okay, fine, I'm not doing shit.
So, Pete, was this any better than the previous Backlund versus Graham match?
Actually, I thought it was. I thought it was leaps and bounds better. Because they at least right off the bat they test the gimmick, so at least they're getting the gimmick over. I enjoyed that, and I like Bob's arm work. I thought that was well done. Now, and then Graham was actually decent in his transitions, and didn't his timing wasn't terrible here. It still wasn't a great match. I mean, I gave it 2 stars, maybe 2.25. But for the most part, it was all about them using the gimmick to the most of the advantage. That also allowed them to chew up some time and keep things going. I wouldn't call it a go match, but Billy Graham was pretty damn good at throwing Bob into the crowd and letting Bob fuck around with the Lumberjacks for a little bit. So they made that engaging. It just should justify how good of a worker Bob is to be able to pull something out of Billy Graham at this point. And I thought this was a masterpiece for Bob, because Graham really is just terrible here at this point.
Yeah, Johnny?
Wow. I thought you were going to totally shit on this. I did. I thought this kind of stunk, but you're right. Bob did pull something really good out of Graham here. The story for me this match is about Sweet Hansen and Monsoon and Vince on commentary about him. Number one, he looks awful. Mm-hmm. He's got some weird perm and he decided to go Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, Bob had Sweet Hansen to work against too. I mean, this is pretty.
Yeah, that's it.
He had a crack gimmick for the Lumberjack match. Swede fast-counting Hansen and freaking the big lug himself, doped-up superstar Billy Graham.
Well, I think, here's the thing. The match we saw before, we know he was doped up.
Yeah.
He wasn't high here. He just isn't good. He just isn't good.
I'll get myself there.
You know. But on commentary, we talked about this last show, about this, you know, who's the alpha male bickering between Vince and Monsoon, and here it is just insane, because Sweet Hansen is doing fast counts, and Vince is going, look at that fast count, that's terrible, and Monsoon's like, well, we don't know. Until we see him do a count on Graham when Backlund has a pinfall, you know, because we don't know. Maybe he's a fast counter, Vince. He says that. Maybe he's a fast counter.
And he also uses the he's not a referee, Vince.
Oh yeah, he's not. You know, and then he's doing one. He's like, well, there it is right there. And he's like, oh, his feet were kind of in the ropes, Vince. I believe it when it's in the middle of the ring is when he does the slow count for Bob. It's hilarious. He's totally fucking with Vince. And the cherry on the top of that sundae is at the end. Because the story, I guess, is Sweet is being paid off by the Wizard, by the way, who looked resplendent in this gear.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing his best to try to cheat for him, you know, but then there's an altercation and he has to, you know, make the decision, does it submission, blah, blah, blah. And they get into a tussle and he punches Superstar. And right before the footage cuts, Monsoon goes, "Wow. You know, I guess if he was on the take, he wouldn't have punched Superstar, huh? Well, that's, like, what? He had to get in that last little dig to prove his point, which is ridiculous. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Arguing was insane. It blew my mind.
Do you think they were deliberately trying to play, like, you know, this is a Vince trope. He loves the commentators arguing. Do you think there's any chance they were doing it on purpose? Or
That's a good point, Parv, but no. I just Vince sounds so frustrated with him.
I think trying to fuck
with the young guy, yeah.
Yeah, get under his skin.
Oh, no, because, you know, he knows what's going on, but he's also putting, you know, Monsoon was a power player. You know, as we know, is what happened when the sale happened. And he was just, he's like, yeah, you're still Vinny to me. And you could, I think that explains why they didn't work together on commentary.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is Monsoon. I'm a worker. You're the promoter's kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Kelly, what did you make of the match?
It was entertaining, for sure. I mean, with all the gimmicks involved. How could it not be, really? Lumberjack match, guest referee, the bickering commentating. It hid all the weaknesses that these two guys had in the previous match they had, where it was just a regular match. So, you know, take that all away, and then you don't really have much. You have superstar Billy Graham, who is pretty limited at this time. Backlund struggled to get anything out of him last time, so, but with all the gimmicks, it was fun. Still no belt for Bob at this point. It's still being constructed somewhere. You know, Superstar looks really bad though. I mean, there's no way around it. He's just dreadful and slowly getting thinner and just looking more and more sick with each passing month here. I hate Sweet Hansen. I've ever since that match he had with Bob way back when, I've just hated him. And this isn't really changing my opinion of him. And we're going to get...
But remember when we watched him in the Carolina footage, how good he looked?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's 10 years before. He was in his prime, you know. Yeah, he did look really good there, for sure. Yeah. I mean,
here he looks like that weird giant guy that was in Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Totally, like, dead ringer.
But we've seen some drop-offs in time. I mean, Sweet is up there.
Yeah.
Being a really good worker to just garbage.
Yeah, oh, totally. But, yeah, and we're going to have to put up with one match between superstar Billy Graham and Sweet Hansen at the next MSG.
Oh,
hallelujah.
To kick off 1980.
Don't you think you should save that for a Titan Extra, whatever you call it?
Yeah, that it's going to be something. Like, it has a chance to be one of the something worst matches we've ever seen.
Well, I mean... I generally agree that it was pretty smart to book Graham into a lumberjack match because it really did hide his limitations pretty well. I actually agreed with Pete that this was actually not bad because all Graham had to do was throw Backlund in and he could let the lumberjacks kind of take over the work if you want. But I did think that there was one side of the ring that looked really thin. There was loads of guys kind of on the other side of the camera, but the guys with our backs to us, there was only like two guys on that side of the ring. It was.
I think I could even escape those lumberjacks on that side.
I do think though that the post match brawl between Graham and Swede is one of the worst in history. I mean, Jesus Christ! So that was something to behold. And I can only imagine what the match is going to be like next time. So.
Yeah, it's going to be the immovable force being the irresistible object, Jess.
Yeah. So that's going to be interesting. I mean, Sweet Hansen is a good few years past the point where he should be in the ring. Really, no, I would say.
Part there's nothing good about Sweet Hansen.
Just before we get onto our final match here, I was interested to see what Crazy James isn't giving us from, like, this is Crazy James's highlights of these MSP right. cards. Just to go through this particular one, December 20th.
Is this going to be a new bit?
Well, because we've oscillated, haven't we, between following the original thing and watching whole cards. So I just
find it fascinating. That's what I'm wondering if it's going to be a new bit.
Is it, well, maybe. Like, what's he not giving us? Because this also actually...
got cut. What's on the editing floor?
Yeah, what's on the editing floor?
It's about time we had a new bit.
You can put some funny music into it.
It also answers a fan question that we had as well. And I'll get to that when we get to it. So the opener was SD Jones taking on Eddie Gilbert in a 20-minute...
Well, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm going to interrupt. Was that the mailbag at Letters of Kayfabe?
No, it was somebody genuinely asked us this on Twitter, or they asked me this, why... well, I'll get to it in a second. So... SD Jones, Eddie Gilbert, 20-minute draw at 13 minutes and 44.
Yeah, I saw that. That was funny.
SD had a match. Tony Garea pinned Johnny Rods at 9 minutes.
That could have been okay.
Sunset Flipper out of the corner. Buddy Rose defeated Ivan Putski via countout after Putski knocked Rose back into the ring before a 10-minute count when Putski was beating Rose on the apron.
I hate that finish. That's like one of the worst finishes ever conceived by man.
I love that they give the silly Polish guy a finish to his match that's like the end of a Polish joke.
Basically. Worst.
Then there was the IC title match, which we watched. That was actually on the History of the IC belt tape. Kelly, that IC match. Then it was Sal Balomo. He pinned Jose Estrada, 8 minutes 46, with a reverse flying body press from the middle turnbuckle. I can only imagine how well executed that was.
Pete, you were compared to Sal Balomo earlier. I don't mean to stooge you guys off, but
they also did that on Twitter earlier too.
So yeah,
Parv is retreading his Twitter jokes. That's great, 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 great podcasting.
Well, it's like 1982 WWF. We're tired and out of ideas.
then it was the lumberjack match. And here we go. This is the listener question, okay? Wendy Richter and women's champion, the Fabulous Moolah, defeated Elizabeth Chase and Princess Victoria when Moolah pinned Victoria. So Richter and Moolah tagging up here. Now, the question we got on Twitter before is, why don't we cover any of the women's matches at all on these cards? And it basically boils down to the fact that Crazy James never includes them, right, Kelly?
Yeah, not a single one on the whole set.
I mean, he systematically cut out all of the women from all of the footage.
Yep, and all the midget matches,
even during,
too.
Even during the Wendy Richter-Moolah feud in Rock and Sock era?
Rock and Sock era.
Rock and Sock.
Or, you know, whatever, Rock and Sock.
Who's
rock
on the edibles
jock.
Here?
The Rock and Sock era, yeah, I know, right?
Well, that's in 84, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Goes beyond, that's on his sequel set, his lesser known sequel set. So,
I mean, I understand where the one was getting cut in like pre that, but that was actually a hot feud. I mean,
so that has raised the question about whether we're going to do a women's special at some point, you know, doing the Titans bit for the Divas Revolution by covering Fabulous Moolah matches. What do you think, Pete? Do you fancy that?
I can't see that. No.
I mean, it could be interesting, like Elizabeth Chase or Princess Victoria. I mean, they could be good workers. You don't know.
Could be.
Possible.
I'm all for it for a one-off thing. Why not?
So, well, if you're a listener, if you're a long-time listener to this show, tell us if you want us to cover the women. You know, and if there's a cry for it, we don't want to be accused of. We want to do our bit for feminism. You know. Exactly. So,
What about the midgets?
Yeah, that too. They've been horribly neglected.
Oh, I see.
Okay. And basically now we're up to the Snooker Stevens match, which we're about to watch. There was also a match between Rocky Johnson and the Black Demon.
I believe. I don't think it was the Black Demon.
He's the African American Demon.
It says the Black Demon.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah. And given the conspicuous lack of Sukluna, I'm guessing that's him because he's back on the next card.
So we have a white guy doing a black-faced demon.
He's the Black Demon, not the black-faced demon.
I figure he's just wearing a black mask.
He's got a
right?
mask. Yes,
he comes out in blackface singing Mammy.
I have a curiosity to see that match. And then there was a Texas death match to see us out between the Strongbows and Fuji and Sato.
Yeah, I was interested about that one.
And that aired on Primetime Wrestling in January of 1986. For some ungodly reason. Yeah.
That's weird.
Prime time. So I don't know why that was aired there. And also, the Snooker Stevens match we're about to watch aired on All Star Wrestling in September of 83. So, again, weird. But, yes. So, why don't we get on to Steven Snooker now? This is something we might want to think about whether we're going to do the full. Because I actually wouldn't mind seeing some of those matches. So, you know, like, could Eddie Gilbert get anything out of Esty Jones over 13 minutes? These are the questions.
no one has ever asked.
These are the questions.
Well, I mean, the great Richard Land has uploaded tons of shows from 1983 on YouTube. So we have the options are there if we wish to take them.
Farb just did dare. Now Kelly just did double dare.
Yeah.
Kelly just did the intro to Mission Impossible.
I mean, it's a lot easier than it used to be. Like, we don't have to send off the discs anymore. It's just like on YouTube. So let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Next generation.
Yeah, we're getting down with the millennials.
Dragon Gate, baby.
Ray Stevens is taking on Jimmy Snooker. And basically, Stevens has two managers at this point, both Albano and Blassie. I thought this was pretty funny. Yeah. Because, do you want to explain what happens, Johnny?
Well, I have my Ray Stevens theory that I want to get to.
Okay.
Real quick. Ray Stevens is wearing his best Evil Knievel gear, which you gotta love. It's fantastic. Two managers. They're like, we're gonna get this guy over as a heel if we have to give him all three of the goddamn managers. I'm gonna start with two. The great thing with Blassie, uses Kane, come on, cross this line. I dare you to cross this line. You know, and Snooker, the crowd's going ape shit, and he's outnumbered, and he leaves. And it's great and dramatic on commentary. Like, well, you can't blame him for, the pop's going to be when he comes back with somebody. And right before that happens, Monsoon goes, well, you know, he's just going to, go back and, get some backup. That's what, there you go. There it is. It's like, Jesus Christ.
I know.
He is an arsehole, isn't he?
It was the worst. Because I would imagine without that, that's a hell of a moment. Because Buddy Rogers comes out and Now he takes his jacket off and based on the match we saw, and this is in the ring, that struck a chord. He's like, I'll kick both. I'll kick your crippled ass and I'll kick your fat ass. I'm Buddy Rogers, motherfucker. And that came through.
I'm just thinking back to trying to rebook great moments of in wrestling history with this Gorilla Monsoon on commentary. He just wreck it
just ruin it. He's like, yeah. Well, you know, that shard is nowhere really near Tully's eye. I don't know why he's giving up. I don't know why Jerry Lawler's really that upset about getting his head shaved. It'll grow back, you know.
Clash 17, who's the mystery partner? And he's probably just there, I'll be Ricky Steamboat, get over it.
It's Ricky Steamboat under that mask. Paul Jones, right? You know, that's obviously Jimmy Valiant under that Charlie Brown mask. I don't know what to do.
I actually thought that the character work from the managers was really funny here, because they were like saying, "Oh, go on, count him out." He does go and get Buddy Rogers, of course. Mm-hmm. And I did have the one note that Buddy Rogers' hair is better than Flair's hair. Because Flair's hair's fallen off a cliff, Pete, hasn't it?
He's not cool at all.
Looks horrible, that hair.
Well, if Ric Flair was allowed to use a jar of petroleum jelly on his hair, then probably looks somewhat like Buddy Rogers.
Then they actually get into it. Like, Rogers actually wants to lock up with Blassie, and I was really willing. I was like, this would actually be quite fun to see Blassie and Rogers hook up, but I guess they were scared. Maybe Blassie would have just died in the ring instantly, or because he's pretty old. Blassie's getting pretty old at this point, isn't he?
Oh no, we've not seen Blassie do anything physical since we started the show, have we?
Well, he gets his jabs in with a cane. I mean, he's still doing that in '86 even, but I don't think he can take a bump or get involved.
Yeah, he was never known for his bumping anyway, you know?
No.
I was just kind of funny. Everyone shits on Gary Hart for not taking bumps. Yeah, we have Blassie, non-bumps. Wizard, I haven't seen him take too many bumps.
That's true.
Well, the bumps
Albano's taken, I wish I didn't see. I mean...
I think that's more about people who... we're told how great Gary Hart was, and then they see him and they don't get it because he's so understated. And they go, why doesn't he bump? And I'm like, well, because he has a broken back. But they don't get the character work quite as much anyway.
Sure, that's true. Good point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. You don't always have to take a bump. I think Wizard and Blassie being perfectly effective in their roles.
Yeah, totally great. I agree.
Although that was always my knock on DiBiase, he never took any bumps when he came back as a manager, and I actually think that hurt it, but then I think they built those angles much more around him than these angles are never built around the manager in the same way, unless it's Albano.
No, you're absolutely right. They became more point people, and to an extent, DiBiase was a manager in the Bobby Heenan mold in that type of way.
And at the time, I mean, it wasn't even his fault. The stable was terrible. You know, it was all just that era of WWF that was that was rough shit.
For a million-dollar man, yeah, he did have a pretty shitty stable.
So let's get on to the match then. What did you make of it, Pete, the Steven Snuka?
Man, just another mediocre at best brawl. I'm being kind. Steven's on top for a while. Snuka makes his comeback. The thing that pops the crowd the most is the post-match headbutt. And Snuka with his little, I don't want to call it a promo, but whatever he said. And that pops the crowd. Kind of there. And then the finish was sucky, too. So, I mean, it really did nothing for me. I mean, I from Snuka with a count-out victory. I mean, you just...
Promotion is just horrible at the moment. It really is.
I made a star match, you know.
Johnny, why don't you give us your Ray Stevens theory then?
Okay. Number one, Pete, he said, New York, I love you, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool.
And they popped huge for it. And then they're so hot for Jimmy Snuka here, which.
That was straight out of the Mick Foley stole Snuka's shtick, it looks like.
Okay. Well, he was his inspiration. Here's my Ray Stevens theory. I just want to posit this out there. And we've always read the stuff where all the old-timers go. Ray Stevens, you know, he was the guy. He was the greatest in-ring performer we've ever seen. And based on the footage we've seen, you know, we're like, don't know that. But we really don't have, you know, what they're talking about. But looking at his style here, because I thought for an old alcoholic, you know, he was doing some great bumping. It got me thinking, like, who's the current guy who's retired now that all, you know, his peers and influences all say is the greatest in-ring performer of all time?
Ric Flair.
No.
Shawn Michaels.
The one that amongst a lot of our fandom group go like, what? And now we're doing the same thing with Stevens, but you look at their styles and they're very similar. Yeah, they're very with the overselling and the flopping around,
right?
And everything. It's very similar. Flair also, to an extent, you know, did a lot of that, but Michaels did it just as floppy as Stevens is doing here as an old alcoholic. And I'm like, maybe it's just one of those things where there's a disconnect where wrestlers think one thing being in the business about what they think is a great performer and a certain fandom does. It hit me, you know, it's like, why do they love Stevens so much? And I saw it there, and I thought the comparison was valid. So,
yeah, okay, yeah, and I can see that. I've said it before. I think it's a combination between he was very easy to work with, I think wrestlers like guys who sell for them.
That too, yes.
You know, and he was like the backstage, you know, the legendary stories and so on. So I think
about it, who would you rather work with, a guy who's willing to bump for you or put you in a front headlock, like, or toss you to the lumberjacks? I mean, when you think about it.
Kelly, you still there? Any thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still here. The match had great heat, but the action wasn't compelling at all. And the finish sucked. That's basically all I got to say about this one.
Right. Yeah, I didn't think much of it either. Christ.
I actually really liked it myself, but,
Well, why don't we go through our end of show awards, if you can call them that. Match of the night. For the first time, this is one of the most difficult questions because I thought everything we saw sucked. So, Pete, what was your match of the night?
Jesus, I'm going to have to go with Bob and Billy Graham.
Oh, it's got to be the worst match of the night ever.
I know. That's terrible.
Johnny?
Oh, I'm going with Snuka Stevens because Stevens was bumping like crazy and the crowd was hot and Jimmy Snuka was kicking ass because everything else stunk. But this at least was fun.
That's the second worst match of the night ever. Kelly?
Yeah, I'll go with the Lumberjack match. It was the most memorable, most entertaining. But yeah, not much to choose from, of course.
What about John Studd versus a live microphone?
Do I have to pick a match of the night?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to have to be the lumberjack match, but I mean, Jesus. I mean, really, that's like a two-star match of the night.
Yeah.
Like horrible.
How about Vince Sr. versus Mortality?
Hey, you know what? Maybe if the other matches might have even been better, we might have even rated that match even worse.
I honestly think it's possible that some of the stuff that Crazy James cut on this particular disc may have been better than that. Like even that SD Jones match has got a chance of being better than some of the stuff we watched.
Greer Rods has a chance, yeah.
The strong pose against Fuji and Saito might have been good. Like they had good stuff earlier in the year, and it was a Texas Death match too.
I'm surprised that didn't make the cut at all.
Yeah,
strange, interesting decisions from Crazy James, but
Maybe mentally ill James had his symptoms start to kick in right around this time, and it's why we're seeing this. And you guys are being very mean.
Okay, so MVP, another really hard question. Who's the MVP of this particular? Pete?
Man, it's either Morocco based on his promo, but Bob being able to pull something out of Billy Graham was just really awe-inspiring. He had the Swede ankle, he had the Swede freaking dead weight on his left ankle. He had Monsoon and Vince arguing in the other, and then he had all the lumberjacks on his shoulders, and on top of that he had freaking Graham jumping up and down on him. I'm gonna have to go with Backlund, man.
Johnny?
Oh, I'm gonna go with Jimmy Snuka for being the only star on this fucking footage. The only shining light of, oh look, a diamond amongst all this shit.
Kelly.
Yeah, I kind of got to go with Johnny on that one, too. He is the one he's the only one that's really, he could have been a big star in any of the territories at this time. He's arguably the biggest star in wrestling at this point. Everybody else around him is just either too old or just not really doing too much. He's the MVP of the territory, that's for sure, at this point in time. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Snuka, even though the match was nothing special. Why not?
I'll stick with my boy Pete here. I'll give it to Backlund. I mean, he did look good. He's the only performer who actually looked good in his match. So I'll give it to him. All right, and then Billy Graham Award winner. Worst performer, and there's basically just an embarrassment of riches here. Pete.
Oh man, I'm gonna have to go with Morocco, just because man, anyone can be that incredible on a promo and so engaging and energetic, and then come out and be the sloth of sloths. I'll go with Morocco.
Johnny,
the demon. He didn't do anything. Monsoon even pointed it out on commentary. He's like, yeah, the demon's just kind of hanging out there. You know, it's not the demon, definitely. Did do shit.
Kelly,
I'm going to go.
You know, pressure is on Parv after Chad called you out on that one there, Parv. Okay,
carry on.
I'm going to go with Joe Pugliese. The fan. He's clearly the worst performer. Like, that body slam attempt was so embarrassing.
Negative 5 stars.
Negative 5-star body slam attempt by Joe Pugliese.
The guy I'm going to give it to, this is almost kind of like a lifetime achievement award deal for him. It's Arnold Scarland. I mean, Jesus. Do something. Appearing on Roger's Corner looking like a kind of dirty old kind of, you know, somebody who may, you know, you find out something in his history, maybe. The 1,000-mile stare deal when he's on the, like, react, just do something.
You want to go to the business, kid?
I just think Arnold Scarland is, you know, done so little, and here he's actually called on. He's actually on screen, and he still does nothing. So, yeah, it's Arnold Scarland. Looking forward to next time then. People may be able to tell, I'm almost losing the will here. Kelly, you're going to have to give at the Any Given Sunday speech, the Al Pacino. It's going to take something like that to get me up for 83, because honestly, this promotion has just been so poor.
Well, we're starting a new year, so it's a fresh start. 82 is behind us. We're into 1983, and part of this is the final year of Bob Backlund as WWF champion, so that's something to look forward to, right? True, it doesn't happen until December 1983. We have to go through the whole year, but that's the reward at the end of this coming year. Looking at the first disc we're going to look at, the first segment is Roger's Corner with Bob Backlund getting a fresh, brand new championship belt.
That's thrilling. Thrilling.
That's fresh.
We have Superstar Graham versus Kurt Hennig on TV.
Wow. Well, that'll be a test of old Kurt's bumping efforts, won't it?
Yeah. Then we have the January Madison Square Garden card with four matches from that show.
I'm wondering if we want to watch the whole one. And I'll tell you why. Because I've got there's a match I've been wanting to see for a very long time in the opener. I think that's the card which has got SD Jones against Baron Scluner on it.
You're right. Yes, you're correct.
I don't have the card up in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that is the card.
That's just sick that you have that date in front of you, like you knew it. I mean, that's like, wow.
That's the battle of the old school versus the new school of who's going to open this show.
It's just a match that I've got morbid curiosity to see, and I just think that we can't trust Crazy James anymore, whether he's going to cut the right stuff out. looking at it.
So you want to make the experience of 1983 longer than it is right now.
I think we should watch the whole cut.
I think Parv realizes we're getting to the end of this footage, and he just wants to stretch out this relationship as long as possible. I love you too, buddy.
I think you're right, Johnny. Well, okay, then we may do that. Like I mentioned, we're going to see Superstar Graham versus Sweet Hansen for sure. Either way, we're going to see the end of Pedro Morales as Intercontinental Champion. There's another highlight to look forward to.
Thank God. But then the belt goes to Morocco, so.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's.
Come on. Look.
From a lazy face to a lazy heel, that's just awesome.
The
Intercontinental title, they always say, goes to the work rate champion. So Don Morocco is the work rate champion. I will not hear anything else.
This occurred to me earlier, and I genuinely believe this, that Pedro Morales' IC title reign from 81 to 83 is the worst reign of any IC champion. It's just brutally awful. And like I put this out there earlier on Twitter, and somebody immediately came back with China. I just thought, well, China Jericho was a better feud than Morocco Morales. Right. And I just wanted to, do you guys agree with that?
Well, China had it for what, 1 week, 2 weeks or something like that? Who cares?
But think about this. Everyone always says, well, I wish they put some value back on that Intercontinental title. Well, apparently, for 2 years, it was...
It was
in shitty matches, so...
Genuinely,
the whole promotion, though, was having shitty matches. So
Can anyone think of a worse long-term title reign than Pedro on the IC belt here?
He was over. That's all that really matters.
This run with Morocco coming up ain't going to be no Beds of Roses, buddy.
Well, it doesn't. Right, the feud with Snuka coming up, so that's a hot.
Yeah, but there's
that's
like,
true, that's true.
Yeah, okay. Between Snuka and Tito, there's at least some hot feuds.
Yeah,
there's some good stuff. No, Pedro's reign was it was very bad. Or the second one for sure. The first one I think was a bit better. His second run was just there was nothing nothing to go out of your way to see at all. Just quickly wrapping up this card, we're gonna look at. We got Backlund and Stud at MSG. Snuka and Buddy Rose, that could be something. I've never seen that match before.
Yeah, that could be interesting. That could be interesting.
That's actually
a, I can tell you, 77.
I was going to say that's a revival of a Portland wrestling feud from the 70s.
And San Fran.
Yeah, it's Fran, you're right.
I just like how, you know, James had a habit of just writing bad if the footage wasn't if the footage quality. I just like it. Yeah. Superstar versus Sweet Handsome, bad.
Terrible. Yeah. Yeah, we put it on as pristine quality, and it's just a shitty
bad match.
Yeah. And then we have a bunch of TV to look at. Ivan Koloff is back in the territory after a long absence. Kurt Hennig is going to take the Stud Slam Challenge. And let's see. Oh, Ray Stevens versus Tony Garea on TV. Johnny, you probably watched that one as a youngster.
and I'm excited for Ivan to come back because that's at least a bit
I'm
of work.
Stoked,
work
yeah, I'm stoked to have Ivan back.
Yeah. I mean, at least that's a bit of work rate on the card. You know?
The work rate just went through the roof. I mean, just having him on the card alone piques my interest.
Yeah.
And it is strange because he went through that blackballed phase, comes back for a blip, and then is right back out.
Yeah.
Weird, no?
Yeah, okay. I don't know if he was blackballed yet. I think he was just, you know, he was in demand and...
It was that 81, wasn't it 81 they did that opposition card?
He was blackballed.
That was in the 70s. That was
he was
the
blackballed John Cedric.
Like, yeah, 76 or something.
IWA it was.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay, I get them all mixed up.
I
think he paid his penance by this point.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that was long ago. Roger's Corner with Gorilla Monsoon as the guest sounds interesting, actually.
That sounds tremendous.
It does. That sounds like egocentric through the roof.
Let me tell you everything wrong with your hair, buddy.
I have watched that in recent times for something else that I do, I can tell you that it's thrilling.
Lecture students or lecture
game, babe? Yeah, it was that other podcast. I'm trying not to shill it because I get a lot of shit from Chad for overshilling that show. So
yeah, I've never seen you shill anything, then you overshill this thing to ad nausea.
But basically, I think the deal there is that Monsoon is going to be like a troubleshooting ref or something.
You're spoiling things, Parv. Come on.
Yeah, but I just think it's interesting in the light of, like, he's really been hard on the refs, so...
Oh, yeah.
I just think maybe he was working on that angle.
How awesome is that part to have a two podcast that actually it's kind of like having, Three's Company and then Two's a Crowd. What's that old show? Yeah, Two's a Crowd. Or Three's a Crowd, and, like, you can follow it up and kind both episodes into one, you know? Like, you have a part. We can end it on Titans on a cliffhanger.
There you go.
We pick up, you know?
Yeah.
You are on edibles.
and the last match on the disc is a match from MSG I've never seen before. A Backlund title defense I've never seen against Don Morocco. So that they have a match in March, a Texas Death match that's actually really good. So this one has a chance to be really good as well. So I'm excited about that.
Is that like Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior? IC versus IC versus World?
It is, but the IC title isn't on the line.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I picture Bob going, yeah, remember when we used to work together in Florida? I'm going to make you work.
Well, Bob loved Morocco.
He loved him.
One of his favorite opponents. Totally.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, JDW was a big fan of Tom Morocco from this kind of era. Yep. He actually loved the Pedro matches and championed them for years. So other views are available, I guess.
Yeah.
But we have not enjoyed the feud.
Hey, you like that hour draw with Don and Bob?
That's
coming up this year, isn't it?
No, we watched that already.
Oh, we already watched that? Okay, I already put it out of my mind.
Torture. All right, well, join us next time then for Titans of Wrestling.